Hello. So I'm talking today about neoliberal strategies, and it's a really long title. I reflected on afterward. Basically, I'm talking about neoliberalization in urban spaces and why that might be something that we want to create some more social movements around. Based on the inequitably severe inequities that result from that. I asked to be reminded when I had 5 minutes because I could go on. So just to set the stage so we're all on the same page, I'll be using neoliberalism, but I also have been trying to adapt the concept and the understanding of neoliberalization. This is some recent interpretation from Brenner and Theodore at Columbia and then New York City University, that the second bullet there, neoliberalization being a process instead of this concept that we think is an end product, so a process instead of an end state, and that it is dependent on historical structures and institutions. And it continuously unfolds. It's not an end product. And it's path dependent, so it connects back into the historical structures. So nothing happens in a vacuum, there's cause and effect. So I really like neoliberalization for the understanding that if we see something as a process that's unfolding, then we can intervene at places, at nodes where we find that our movement might challenge what it is that we don't like what we're seeing. And that neoliberalization is a process that occurs via strategies. The reason I've taken some of the work from Brenner and Theodore is that they've really deconstructed this concept of neoliberalism, and particularly offers it to be deconstructed even further, to be on the ground in community building, what's happening in our urban cities. And so we can really take this and apply it in our communities on the ground. For those of us who are on the ground doing work, those of us in academia, we can start really not just seeing it as this conceptual framework, but it's a practical way that inequity in health is occurring. Of course, our understanding of neoliberalism, I really like this one, which is capitalism with the gloves off. Markets are free to regulate themselves. There's minimal government intervention. Lots and lots and lots of privatization, which occurs through these public-private partnerships between private elites and government. And I think this is the kind of conceptual framework that most of us who are involved with studying or looking into this have been using. Again, from Theodore and Brenner, they offer many strategies as to how neoliberalization occurs. But what I did was I cherry-picked the ones that, in my research and experience, I see fits most directly with community rebuilding in urban spaces, where we can actually take these strategies and see what does that look like on the ground? What do we mean by that, right? So how do we do our research and inform the movement to change that? So the strategy or the organizations of neoliberalization is uneven development. As an outcome that occurs through creative destruction. And this creative destruction is a process where we're destroying communities in order to recreate the ones that certain people feel are better. And the local people who are there, the marginalized communities, have no say in that new creation. So it's a creative destruction, a little bit reminiscent of a dialectical process, but again, it's more action-oriented, right? We can kind of see what destruction and creation may look like in our communities. And this happens through these territorial development, and I'll get into that a little bit more, place promotion and economic development, results in capital accumulation, which results in health and wealth inequities. So I've adapted from their framework to fit my work and our understanding of inequitable health in urban areas. This is a rendition of these strategies, and the strategies are placed in the destruction and creation. So it really, again, gives you a real fundamental basis for what we mean. So as far as the strategy of territorial development, what we're destroying, and if you really look at each one of them, I don't know if there's a pointer, but on the far left, all the strategies, really, the destruction, what allows this to occur is that we're destroying centralized governments, right? We're not able to, there's no control anymore by some governmental entity. And if you go over to the create column, so for example, for territorial development, earlier systems of central control of growth are destroyed, and in their place, we're creating these community development boards. And these boards are public-private, or what we call quasi-public-private partnerships. On these boards sit not just public officials anymore, or elected officials, or heads of government, but the developers themselves sit on these boards. So the developer is really now acting as a, in a way, a shadow government, because they themselves are the one getting the contracts for the development, but they're sitting on the development boards that in the cities. And now this is normal. If you do a search for economic development boards, you'll find that just about every city that's looking at development has either had a community development or economic board, or is in the process of creating one. And it's not surprising to see that these have public-private partnerships on them. And so this sort of plays out for all the strategies, for territorial development, for certainly for economic development as well. Other ways of destruction of that occurs via these strategies are the sale of previously what we would call public resource or public assets to private developers, or just to private enterprise. And this occurs not just in housing, but management of schools, management of recreation departments, fire departments. Everything is becoming privatized. Water utilities, we're struggling with that now in Baltimore. There's been other cities and states that have struggled with that. And the creation is then of this, again, this elite private enterprise capital accumulation, again, fortified by government, right? We have the rental assistance demonstration project that's just been rolled out in many cities. Baltimore, again, 40% or more of our public housing is going to be placed in the hands of private developers. There's no transparency, there's no accountability, there's no perception of whether there'll be rent control, if there is rent control, for how many years. This is a complete privatization of the market. And the process that allows that is that the government says that we have no money, so we need private to come in and help us take care of public assets. Place promotion, again, the decentralization of government. And what we get then is these community development boards and economic development boards being the ones that offer tax incentives, land grants, to attract developers to come, or they will acquire land, parcel land, and offer a large stretch of land to entice developers to come and build box office spaces, big box Walmarts, Office Depot, restaurants. So we're moving away from the local initiative to determine what goes into our new spaces, because we have this creation of places. This is the understanding of what place promotion looks like on the ground in urban spaces. many of us who are involved in community development work, we're familiar with the empowerment zone and the enterprise zone areas that are in historically marginalized and disadvantaged communities that if you build in, you get tax breaks. Again, it attracts a certain group of people to come there, in there and take over that space. Again, usually no local intervention to decide what goes there. This brings in this whole one-size-fits-all phenomena. So it's not just a one-size of a stadium and a market-rate housing and particular retail or restaurants that are only affordable to moderate and market-rate earners. But we get things like zero tolerance, right? We get curfews. So this is the understanding of this neoliberal process or neoliberalization in the urban spaces. We're creating spaces of gentrification. We're creating spaces of elitism. Curfews, we've just enacted curfew in Baltimore City, maybe a month, not even 2 months ago, which is meeting a lot of challenge. Yeah. Without much community involvement, this decision was made. Again, we're creating spaces, we're putting away the marginalized communities so that when we attract the developer and the investor, we can promote the place as some place that's safe for them. Folks don't want to be bothered with the messiness of poverty, yeah? Because everybody gets kind of shaky and they feel unsafe. So we're not addressing it, we're just putting it away. And economic development, again, decentralizing control of growth, some of the other things that I mentioned, and the economic development boards and the tax incentives. So what we're creating is, through this neoliberalization process in urban spaces, is spaces of power. So it's not just a physical space of power, they're spaces, they're production of power, right? The spaces of production. People who control those spaces now control the morals of our communities. And they control the means of production. And if they feel that it's okay to have inequity, well, that's okay because they have the power to decide that. So we're really just, this disparity, this gap between what wealth is, it's not just wealth and income, it's really, we're recreating the whole socio-political economic context of what our society is or is going to be. It's not a small task that's been happening. But really, this bringing in this and bringing together sort of the political context and political economic framework for what's happening in our urban areas, it's really an old problem, right? We're just reframing an old problem. We've been rebuilding urban communities to the disadvantage of the marginalized community for many years. This is nothing new to us. If this is new to us, we've been asleep. Private development has always been supported by government. Native American land accumulation, if that's not uneven development, I don't know what is. If that's not territorial development, I don't know what is. If that's not capital accumulation and dispossession, I don't know what that is. And so we can really trace a path that allows neoliberalization in the way that we are experiencing it in urban spaces, and what has allowed this particular rendition of that to unfurl in the way it does, because it has real fertile ground to do its work until we stop it, of course. So this uneven development occurring through the territorial development and place promotion, which leads to capital accumulation, occurs, as we mentioned, not just through the growth for economic giants, but protection of these economic giants by government. So they're actually insulating the elite to make sure that they don't fall down from those places of power. Through the tax exemption, through the subsidizing, through initiating purchase of land and selling for very low low and non-market rate prices, or new market rate prices that's decided for them, and the support of such the support of such practices by the government. Again, this, I thought I had to throw a slide in that actually showed some health data, just in case there were those people in the room who need that. But this is a slide of data from Baltimore City, and particularly the second column shows East Baltimore, which I'm going to focus in on a bit more now, because this is a community that's peripheral to the Johns Hopkins Medical Institutions, where I've done a lot of research. And this community, as you can see from the demographics here, the income is well below the city average. Less than 20, there's 84% of the community that has an income of less than 20,000, 53% completed 12th grade. And then if you look at the health data, it matches with the economic data. But this is nothing specific to Johns Hopkins, let me just say that. And I would actually challenge any one of you here who come from an urban university or urban hospital or public health department that sits in an urban area to reflect and challenge your own institution and to find this data, because it's there. Because many of our universities, hospitals, and institutions have expanded by exploitation of the neighbors, particularly the neighbors have been African American or of color or low income, because this is the way we roll in the U.S. Our class and our race distinction guides our practice of community development. So now I have mostly some slides to just image what I've been mentioning. So uneven development, this is Johns Hopkins in the 1950s and 60s. Just to show you how very close we have in that time what we would call slum and blight, the expansion of the university into the periphery of 59 acres after displacement of more than 1,000 families, majority African American and low income. This is now coming to 2007, again another massive expansion of the university into 88 acres this time, and displacement of more than 800 African American families and low income. Okay. Now this happened in 2001. This is not in the 1950s or 60s when we thought that kind of thing was okay. We kind of think that stuff's not okay anymore, but we're still doing it, this uneven development and exploitation. We build retail space in the new developments that are unaffordable to the local community. We don't allow food stamps in the retail spaces in the community. Destruction and creation, again, we're displacing the problem. So this graph shows the displacement of the number of shots fired in a Portland area that's undergoing gentrification. So if you look at the red hot spots, so it's decreased in the top left, but it's only been redistributed in the areas where people were displaced into. So we didn't take care of the problem of the people with guns and those activities, we just displaced it. If you look on the right, Lipton and others showed that in the same East Baltimore area after the Hopkins expansion, drug activity was decreased in that area. But then when you looked at where residents were displaced to, you also find an increase in drug activity in those areas. Again, we're just displacing the problem. We're creating and destroying. We're not really addressing the issues of poverty. Territorial economic development. This is how the city uses eminent domain in Hartford now to try to take land from private to sell to give to private for a stadium. In Baltimore, the administration buys land to turn over to a funder. The territorial development and place promotion, we're using schools as neighborhood hubs in order to attract development and a certain race and class of people. The school will be run by Hopkins. And to really end with an up note, some would suggest that neoliberalization of urban spaces is a social movement from above, and that in order for us to change that, we just have to have a social movement from below. And I think that's really true. So these slides sort of summarize what that might look like. We organize from within our communities. We build coalitions across sectors. We build coalition across folks affected and those that are not affected. We help to lift up the issue. As far as land, we build community land trusts. We rally for living wages. We build co-ops. We build local ownership for local people in the community. We train new leaders to take over political office that will hold folks accountable and offer transparency. And we do action research. And so for me, it's not sufficient that we say we go from science to policy, but we have to go from science to policy to action. Our research has to advise our movements, and our movements have to advise our research. We are disconnected in so many ways, and this is a way I think that we can really use our capacity to bridge this destruction, to create something different. This I'll just run through. These are different places that have been doing social movement. When Colombia tried to take over Manhattanville, CBA was negotiated through protests and coalition building. In Baltimore, community organized to demand affordable housing. In Miami, University of residents challenged University of Miami for gentrification. Costa Justa is doing wonderful things in the Bay Area, demanding community benefits instead of displacement. This is around affordable housing. We have many community land trust movements that are coming along. New York has really been pushing the ball. Baltimore's recently started to look at this. Homeless people asking, can't we take over abandoned housing instead of selling it to market rate people to build luxury condominiums in our homes? Why are you building urban forests when we can live in those homes? Gentrification in London is being challenged and being won. We have coalition across students and unions and community. In Hopkins, there was a living wage campaign, and students and doctors were out supporting union workers. We have to use the media more effectively. We have to use social media. We have to get in and we have to have them write about what we're doing in the movement. We have to rally for employment when we have development. It's not okay to bring 60 or 70% of out-of-state workers to do our development in local communities when we have such high unemployment rate in the communities that we're developing. That is unethical. And we have to continue to rally for different kinds of parties. We have Bill de Blasio from the Working Families Party. That's a really good move. We have more union folks being elected into leadership. There is so much going on. There was just too much to really fit into 20 minutes. Just recently in Baltimore, on one of the most major intersections, we have a big billboard, "Who is land banking?" And we want to know who put that up. But it's awesome, because Hopkins is a big land banker. And we have local community organization in Baltimore, Brace, really lifting up what is happening so that people know everybody displaced intentionally. EBDI is the acronym for the development entity that's pushing gentrification in East Baltimore, showing Hopkins as the plantation and the Annie E. Casey Foundation as the experimenter. We have to look at we have to find alternative funders. And so I end with this slide that we have to stop the social movements that are coming from above, and we have to have social movements that are coming up from below. We have to go from that left, which is uneven development, to the right, which is even development. We have to stop the creative destruction, and we have to have co-creation so that we don't have accumulation of capital in one home, but we have multiple homes that are redistributing that capital so that we can have wealth and health equity. Thank you.